Why does a rollicking Jazz Age tale published in 1925 feel so relevant today? Well, for starters, The Great Gatsby is a cautionary tale about wealth and excess. It's a story about a bunch of rich people throwing extravagant parties and generally being horrible to each other. A kind of scathing takedown of shallow pseudo-celebrity culture. And F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel is also a portrait of an outsider looking in, seduced and then repulsed by the world he encounters. It certainly makes the book relatable to many people. The Great Gatsby is a staple of high school literature classes, so you may be revisiting Fitzgerald's classic for the second or even third time. But whether you're a repeat customer or this is your first time stepping out with Nick Carraway and the gang, welcome. Before we dive in, there are a few things you should know. The events of the novel unfold in West Egg and neighboring East Egg, which may put you in mind of the glitzy Hamptons. In reality, Fitzgerald's coastal towns are actually modeled after Kings Point and Sands Point, villages on the north shore of Long Island where barons built summer cottages, which were actually mansions with dozens of bedrooms and sweeping lawns. In the early 20th century, when the novel takes place, this area was referred to as the Gold Coast. The Great Gatsby boasts some of the best-known characters in modern literature, which means you're one audiobook away from doing much better at your local trivia night. Nick Carraway, the book's hero and narrator, is a Midwesterner who's bowled over by the affluence he encounters out east. This moneyed world is embodied by Jordan Baker, a socialite who captures Nick's attention, Tom Buchanan, whose wealth is matched only by his general awfulness, and his wife Daisy Buchanan. And then, of course, there's Jay Gatsby, incredibly rich and extremely worldly. Everything Nick is not. Nick, who is clearly a stand-in for Fitzgerald, is dazzled by Gatsby and Daisy, at first anyway. He goes to the parties, drinks the champagne, falls in love with the girl, but he knows he'll never truly be part of the scene he's describing. As the summer goes on, and the crazy nights and drunken fights take their toll, Nick begins to see the underbelly of the lifestyle he's come to appreciate. This is Fitzgerald's lesson, it seems. Scratch the glittery surface, and the super rich are like many of us, making questionable decisions and grappling with self-doubt. It's worth noting that for all his apparent disdain for Jay Gatsby's over-the-top spending, Fitzgerald was by all accounts entranced by the extremely wealthy and their outsized power in society. Thanks to that fascination with the ultra-rich, generations of readers have been able to enjoy Jay Gatsby's wild and fizzy parties, no invitation required. Let the fun begin.
Chapter 1. In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since. "Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone," he told me, "just remember that all the people in this world haven't had the advantages that you've had." He didn't say any more, but we've always been unusually communicative in a reserved way, and I understood that he meant a great deal more than that. In consequence, I'm inclined to reserve all judgments, a habit that has opened up many curious natures to me and also made me the victim of not a few veteran bores. The abnormal mind is quick to detect and attach itself to this quality when it appears in a normal person, and so it came about that in college I was unjustly accused of being a politician, because I was privy to the secret griefs of wild, unknown men. Most of the confidences were unsought. Frequently I have feigned sleep, preoccupation, or a hostile levity when I realized by some unmistakable sign that an intimate revelation was quivering on the horizon. For the intimate revelations of young men, or at least the terms in which they express them, are usually plagiaristic and marred by obvious suppressions. Reserving judgments is a matter of infinite hope. I'm still a little afraid of missing something if I forget that, as my father snobbishly suggested, and I snobbishly repeat, a sense of the fundamental decencies is parceled out unequally at birth. And, after boasting this way